Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Radio Sai Answering Booth, and this is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, welcoming you to the show with humble salutations at Swami's Lotus Feet. This is a question and answer program, and so you will agree with me that it is in place to start by praying to Swami to remind us that He is the one who asks the questions and the answers are from Him too. Sometimes when you come to think of it, life is a long course involving learning through the process of asking questions itself. And the whole knowledge gathering happens through constantly seeking answers. Most often, if we look at it critically, it doesn't matter what the answer is. How do I say that? When we ask the same question at different points in time, when under different circumstances, we come up with different answers for the same question, that's what it suggests. From a simple question like, what do I want to become in life, to what is the purpose of life? The answers are so different at different points in our life. In fact, the answers to such questions literally grow with us. So more than the answer itself, what probably matters is how much the answer has changed over the years. And as we go through life, what becomes more and more important is, where do we seek those answers from? Whom do we turn to when we have dilemmas, and whose advice we eventually listen to and follow? That's why company becomes so very important. And when we choose noble company, when we follow the advice of noble people we come across in life, we will eventually stop seeking answers from outside. Satsangatve nissangatvam. Good company will eventually lead us to a state where we will seek answers in solitude alone. It's not that we have to wait till we get to that point. We all, I'm sure, seek answers from within all the time. But most of us are in a state where it is good to hear the same from outside too. And that's where discussing our doubts and dilemmas helps us and helps others too. And I'm grateful to all the listeners who've sent me questions, because I've personally learnt a lot trying to answer your questions. And I keep receiving mails from so many people all the time who say they got answers for their unasked questions. So I sincerely thank Swami in each one of you. This week too, we have a very interesting question. I have myself had thoughts about this topic many times, but I've never gone deep into it. And I've come across many others too who have had questions on this topic. So I'm glad this came up. But we are not there yet, isn't it? Because it's time for the quote of the week. The quote I wish to read for you today is from a Scottish philosopher and writer, Thomas Carlyle. I quote, "Permanence, perseverance and persistence, in spite of all obstacles, discouragement and impossibilities. It is this that in all things distinguishes the strong soul from the weak." End of quote. Well, what can I explain in this quote? You know, we live in a weird world where we judge, honor and respect people based on their success and the success brought by that success. Or sometimes for the things which we should not be given any credit at all, for having a pretty face, for instance. Instead, we should learn to respect those who have remained good and those who have continued to strive even when faced with endless obstacles. It shouldn't matter if they saw success at the end of it or not. A true hero is one whose spirit cannot be defeated by failures and setbacks, isn't it? That's why perseverance and persistence should not just be a means to a success or glory, but a way to define ourselves itself. But because we all live in a society where only success is noticed and appreciated, we tend to look at perseverance as a means to that end. As Swami would say, start seeking what you feel is worth seeking and hold on to it till the very end, even if it means you were to crash out of mere fatigue. What about permanence? A truly good person is one who is good no matter what he or she gets in return for being good. That is the sign of permanence, isn't it? Take a fragrant blossom and hold it in your hand gently for a few minutes. It will add fragrance to your hand. Take the same tender blossom and crush it violently with your hand. It will still leave a fragrance on your hand. Because that is the nature of the flower. Our challenge is to be good like that. I said that we live in a society that seems to appreciate success more than the resilience and values, but actually it's not so true. that's the superficial society, like the topsoil of a land which keeps changing. Swami says in his Prema Vahini that it is always these eternal values that are respected in any society. With success, money and authority, you may get fleeting recognition. But the true fame in any society comes only from these eternal values or goodness that is independent and resilient perseverance. So before we head to the question for this week, permit me, dear listeners, to read the quote one more time. I quote, "Permanence, perseverance and persistence, in spite of all obstacles, discouragement and impossibilities. It is this that in all things distinguishes the strong soul from the weak." Let's then head to the question we have for this week. This question has been asked by a very regular listener from Canada who wishes to be anonymous. We will not name her. It's a very interesting question, as I said. I have Sister Sumana to read out the question for us. So let's listen to the question and let's pray to Swami that he gives us better understanding on this very important topic.
Sai Ram, I would like to know if Swami has said anything about organ donation after demise for use by a hospital to save lives, organs like heart, kidney, liver, etc. I know blood donation is encouraged in Swami's super speciality hospital for healthy people who meet certain criteria. But would the hospital ask the family of the deceased if they would consider organ donation to save a life? In the West, people are encouraged to sign up for organ donation in their lifetime so that the family does not have to make that difficult decision. I would appreciate your response. Thank you.
Thank you for that wonderful question and probably breaking that down into what are the different topics which were raised in that question. Has Swami said anything about organ donation? Are people encouraged to donate organs in Swami's hospital, just like how blood donation is encouraged? And do they offer that option for a person to sign up for organ donation even as they are alive so that their family need not make that decision later? As I said, this is an important topic and I'm glad that it came up. So apart from answering the specific questions, because these are very clearly regarding some of the practices in Swami's super speciality in general hospitals. So apart from answering the specific questions, maybe we should examine the idea of organ donation itself a little more to probably get a better understanding of this, because it's very popular. It is spoken about and nowadays it's become very easy to sign up for this. So maybe from the philosophical standpoint, it would be interesting to look at this particular concept. So I think we'll do that also. In fact, for the major part, I'll be doing that of looking at this concept in a very, very general manner. Let's get the direct ones out of the way. So the direct questions which were asked was, does the hospital encourage organ transplant? Well, the hospital, the super speciality hospital, Swami's, does not perform any such surgeries. We've spoken to many of the doctors from the various departments. In fact, we do that on a regular basis. Once when we were talking to the cardiologist, one of the senior cardiologists, she was telling how our hospital is equipped to deal with, has performed and has dealt with very, very complex cases when it comes to heart surgeries. And she actually made a point by saying that we've done all complex surgeries barring heart transplant. So that alone is not done. And similarly, the hospital, when you talk about the Department of Urology, kidney transplants were done initially. For a few years, they were part of the surgeries which were being performed in the hospital, but they were stopped. And there were reasons for that. We'll come to that eventually. Now the hospital does not do any form of transplants. If you are aware about the idea of organ transplant, there are many types of organ transplantation. Apart from many organs that can be donated and transplanted, generally it can be divided into organ transplant and organ tissue transplant. Neither of that is done. In fact, even cornea transplant, which is considered to be much simpler than the other organs, even that is not done in a hospital. So unlike blood, if you talk about blood donation, which is a big thing, one of the first departments which was set up in the super specialty hospital was the blood bank. And I mean, we've spoken to some of the people who were involved in setting it up and how Swami would visit regularly there. In fact, if the time permits, I'll be narrating one incident when Swami went to the blood bank. That'll be in the fag end of the program, of course. So the blood bank was set up and the donation of blood was encouraged because I think blood is needed for all the surgeries that are performed in the cardiology department. So that's required on a daily basis, and that's why blood donation is very much part of the hospital. Apart from that, I think the laws that govern a process such as organ donation is completely different from if you talk about blood donation, because that's the main reason why this is not followed. I'll come to some of those reasons in the course of this answer. So why does Swami's hospitals don't have that facility? There are many reasons. Most of them are purely practical reasons. Now let's come to the most important question of, has Swami spoken anything about organ donation post-mortem? From my limited knowledge, there's hardly anything that Swami has spoken in public. I made it a point to ask a lot of people who were involved with the hospital, the administration of the hospital. I don't think Swami has spoken anything categorically about organ donation, though I've heard from people about things that Swami has said. But since they're not very authentic information, I'm not going to quote them directly because I'm not too sure what was exactly Swami's stance, what did Swami exactly say when he mentioned some of these things. Most of it is hearsay, so I think I'll refrain from quoting them directly. But nevertheless, it gives us a certain idea of how to look at this whole concept. So in the course of this answer, what I'll try to do is use some of these concepts which Swami speaks about, some of the general concepts that Swami speaks about, and try to apply it to the idea of organ donation. Apart from that, there are some things which Swami has said in his discourses with regard to some of these surgeries. We will use that also. And of course, the practical purposes for which these surgeries are not performed in a hospital, I think that is also very important input for us to look at this. And of course, generally, we can have a discussion on this. I think that's what we will try to do. So let's come to the important, or rather the crux of the whole matter. So is organ donation good or bad? If that is a question that we need to take head on right away. Well, Swami says, paropakarartham idam shariram. This body is meant to be utilized in the service of others. And this is a quotation which Swami used to speak about so very often. Paropakarartham means it is for the purpose of serving others. Idam shariram, this body has been given. So given that concept, certainly the idea of organ donation must be noble. There's no doubt about that. If we can be used to others in any manner, even after our death, why not? It definitely seems to be a very, very noble idea. So I think it is one. So if you're going to ask this direct question, is organ donation good or bad? I think maybe it is, right? From the outset, that's what it appears. In fact, as I was saying, the procedure itself has become so very simple in the West, and in fact, even in some of the Indian cities, even when you're going for a regular checkup, this is asked, whether would you like to be a part of this campaign? Would you like to donate your organs after your death? And it's sometimes so simple as just ticking a box in the form that you're filling for a regular checkup. So it's become so very easy. So in that sense, probably one of the simplest charities that we can do is organ donation post-mortem, right? So it does appear like a very, very noble idea, and I don't think there should be any objections right away. But let's for a moment try to explore if there could be any reasons against the idea. The idea behind doing this is not to shoot down the idea of organ donation or decry it in any manner. The whole idea is to see if there are any arguments against this concept of organ donation. So in that way, if we can prep ourselves to avoid some of the fallouts, maybe we can do that, because it does seem like a very noble idea. And if there are some things which probably make it any less noble than it is, then probably we can work against, I mean, work to deal with some of these bottlenecks. That's what is the idea. So that's why I want to spend the next few minutes or the rest of the program talking about, could there be any other ways of looking at this concept itself? So let's look at it from two standpoints. One is, of course, looking at it practically, and the other is from a philosophical standpoint. I think that's what we always do in this program when we take the recourse of Swami's message. The idea is to merge the practical and physical. That's the whole idea of this entire program, or for that matter, any program that we do on the radio, right? So we will look at it from these two standpoints, from the practical standpoint and the philosophical standpoint. The best way to look at it from the practical standpoint is, as I said, we can go back to our hospitals, Swami's hospitals, and see why they refrain from using these surgical methods. Probably that will give us an idea why, of what are the practical bottlenecks in this whole issue. As I said initially, the super specialty hospital has been functioning since the early 90s. So when it first began, when the urology department was set up, there were kidney transplants for the first few years, and eventually it was stopped. And if we look at the reasons why it was discontinued, I think they're purely socio-economic reasons and, if I could say, medico-legal reasons. In fact, if you look at it, the mandate of the hospital, when Swami set up the hospital, the whole idea of the hospital was to serve the poorest of the poor, to bring the best treatment, the best medical care to the poorest of the poor in the rural areas. So that was the mandate given to the hospital. So given that backdrop, I think when they started doing kidney transplants, see, the surgery can be free, the outpatient consultation can be free, the follow-up checkups can be free. But some of these surgeries involve a lot of post-operative medication, and at that point they were quite expensive. I think the prices of some of these drugs might have come down over the years, but at that point the amount of discipline that a patient had to maintain after a surgery like this was quite rigorous. And I think one of the reasons was, when I was speaking to some of the people in the hospital, they said they found that the patients were coming from typically very, very poor background. This is not a good solution for them. If they come with problems relating to kidney disorders, a kidney transplant was not a solution to them, which was a long-term solution, because they could not after that afford the medicines which had to be taken on a regular basis. They could not afford to hold on to some of the dietary disciplines. So in a sense, it was becoming like a surgery which was not, it was not serving the purpose of the hospital, right? That was one of the reasons. And I think around the early 90s was the time when, in India at least, the organ trade racket went to mammoth proportions, and the government had to step in a big way and bring very, very stringent laws and try to clamp some of these illegal activities which was going around, especially in relation to patients who were poor, patients who were gullible to some of these terrible practices. So the government came down very, very heavily, and the laws which were regulating some of these practices were very, very stringent. And it was around that time that a few cases happened, a few incidents happened. When it came to Swami's notice, Swami said, you know, there's no point in continuing this. If these procedures are causing these problems, then it doesn't serve the purpose. As I said, the mandate of the hospital is to serve the poor and serve them as best as possible. So these were very rare cases which were coming. So because of one or two cases, the other consultations which can be done, the other surgeries which could be performed, they were getting hit, because, you know, you have a certain amount of resources in terms of doctors, in terms of personnel, in terms of time of some of these medical professionals, and the monetary resources. So it also comes to the point, it also comes to the idea of how do you best utilize whatever resources you have, optimum utilization of the resources available to address this mandate of trying to serve the poor. So always there is this balance which the hospital needs to strike. In fact, not only these surgeries, there are so many other complex surgeries which Swami has said that, you know, if the surgeries are very high risk and the surgeries are very, very expensive, and maybe there are other institutions which can deal with such cases. If these are, you know, in trying to deal with one case, if you're going to give the resources which could save the lives of four or five people for this one case, you know, some of these calls are very, very practical, and I don't think any of us can sit in judgment and say whether the doctors have taken the right decision or not. These were things which Swami said, see, this is the purpose of the hospital. So ensure that you're able to stick to that purpose all the time. So many of the procedures which required very, very advanced treatments, which required enormous amounts of resources, and which were not giving the results which probably the doctors would want, were eventually dropped out. And of course, all of this was done under the guidance of Swami, and Swami said that, you know, this is what the hospital needs to do, right? So as an institution that is set up to serve the poor, these practices or these transplantation surgeries did not seem to fit into that picture of the purpose of the hospital, right? And maybe before we move forward, I spoke about the illegal practices which came about with relation to the organ trade and all of that. So I think if you wish to be an organ donor, you must see if you can ensure that it goes into the hands of the right institutions. I think that onus is there on the person who decides to take up this. So if they're going to be used for high profits or unethical practices, I think it's just like you offering your hard-earned money for the wrong usage, right? It's just the same. And a part of that responsibility of whatever that your money is being used for comes to you. I think it's the same way. If you are donating your organ, it is not just about saying that, okay, I've signed a paper and I'm given my consent for this, and not worrying about which is the institution which is going to use this you're giving. I'm not talking only about the unethical part of it, or where the illegal part of the system comes. Even if you're going to give it to a hospital which is probably making a huge profit out of this procedure that it's going to perform, I think even then you're being party to a process which is probably not all that noble as we think it is when we are trying to offer our organs as a donation, right? So is there a way you can ensure that if you donate your organs, it becomes a form of service and not you being a part of some kind of a lucrative business model? I think that is something that you can look at when I'm talking about the practical points from where we need to look at this. As much as possible, ensure this. I think most of the countries in the West, the model is, I think, pretty secure. There's no problem with that. But nevertheless, I think it's a good thing to keep in mind. And as I said, the other reason why it is not done in the hospital is the optimum utilization of the resources, right? That is what we always come down to. That is the reason why some of the procedures are not done. Because Swami said, see, it is not about the hospital just standing out as an advanced center or getting accolades that, yeah, these doctors can do all these kind of surgeries, or they do these very, very complex surgeries. See, that is not the idea of the hospital. Swami said, if you're going to spend so much time and resources on achieving some laurel like that, in the meantime, you could probably serve four or five more patients, right? That was how Swami looked at it. In fact, we have a visiting doctor in the cardiology department, Dr. Jivanandam. I think you can look up his name. We also have an interview with Dr. Jivanandam. He's supposed to be one of the top heart transplant specialists in the U.S., he visits our hospital regularly, and of course, barring the heart transplant, he does all the other surgeries. Because Swami said that, you know, it doesn't, the hospital does not need that kind of advanced surgeries. So even looking at it from that standpoint, if the idea is to serve the poor, an institution like Swami Super Speciality Hospital, which is set up to serve the poor, at this point in time, given the advances in this field of surgery, it doesn't seem to be a procedure which is useful in serving the poor, if I could put it that way. As I was saying, that if a few years down the line, these surgeries become more economical, the post-operative medication if it becomes more economical, and if it suits the mandate of the hospital of, you know, you can do these surgeries and serve the patients better, I think it will be taken up. So since it is not there, as I said, because we don't do these surgeries, we don't even have that option of people asking for, giving the option to people, would you like to donate your organs, because the hospital has not signed up for that that network of hospitals which are allowed to do this also. The other reason is, I think, if anybody is very serious about organ donation, I would suggest that you go and read up a little more about it, because it's not about, you know, any of us who eventually die out of some disease or out of old age are suitable for organ donations of all kinds. Most of the organ donations, especially the ones which are very, very important, these organs can be harvested from a person only when they are brain dead, which is again a case which happens when there is a certain medical condition or during accidents. That was again a very, very practical call. I was speaking to one of the people who have been an administrator in the hospital. He said, purely going by the numbers, purely by going by the profile of the patients who come to us, some of these practices have been have not been embraced by the hospital, purely practical reasons. In fact, if you go to the ophthalmology department, the reason why they don't do cornea transplants is mainly because most of the patients who come to them, the percentage of the patients who come to them for other surgeries like cataract and similar procedures is far larger than some of these transplant surgeries which are required. So the hospital chooses to dedicate its time and energy and resources for these surgeries. So for many practical reasons, it seems that right now these surgeries are not really means by which the poorest of the poor can be served. So if that is something which is in your mind, so these are just the practical reasons I'm giving you. I'm still not saying that organ donation is bad or it should not be done. But these are some things which probably you can keep in mind, right? Now, coming to the philosophical standpoint, is there any reasons why organ donation could be bad or wrong from a philosophical standpoint? I don't think so, but I think we'll just look at it a little more critically. But before that, let's talk something more general. Now, according to Sanatan Dharma, the practices that we follow in Sanatan Dharma, a body of a person who is deceased is cremated. It is not buried, right? It's always cremated. No, we leave a lot of property when we die. Maybe, you know, we leave a house, and even if we don't have people who are going to who will be our heirs, even then a lot of people leave a lot of property. We don't end up burning all our property or, you know, whatever we have collected in our lifetime, but the body is definitely burnt. Of course, the most practical reason is, of course, you can't leave the body to rot in a crowded place, and there are so many other things for that. And of course, from the historical standpoint, some of these practices like cremation are very, very old, and that time there was no concept of organ donation and all that. So I'm not directly drawing a parallel, but probably if you just look at this idea of why were bodies cremated and not buried according to Sanatan Dharma, the belief which backed this. Again, I'm not saying that this is what we all have to believe in. This is a belief system. We're just looking at the idea behind the reason behind why Sanatan Dharma says that a body has to be cremated. Of course, even in Hinduism, there are people who still practice the idea of burying a body. In fact, there is saints and sages are generally buried, not cremated. I'll come to that. But looking at most of the people, generally they go in for cremation. I had once answered a question about what happens to the soul when a person dies, and I think I spoke at length about how the senses are withdrawn into the subtle body, and the subtle body withdraws the pranas into itself, and then the subtle body parts from the physical body. And that is what is termed as death, when the pranas are drawn into the subtle body and the subtle body leaves the gross body. And when I was talking about that, I'd made a mention of this. In the case of people where they've had very, very strong attachment to the relationships of the body or the body itself, when the body consciousness has been very, very strong, there is a belief that the subtle body, instead of moving on, whether it's going to heaven or hell or taking another body, it tends to get attached to this body. So one of the beliefs is that you facilitate this gross body to return to the elements as soon as possible, so that this subtle body does not get attached to and does not linger around it. It moves on, right? That's the whole idea. So that's the idea why they say that a body needs to be cremated rather than allowed to decompose over a period of time. And the reason why it is, why the burial process is followed when it comes to saints and sages, is it's believed that they have completely transcended that body attachment. And in the case of such elevated masters, even the physical remains become very, very auspicious. And that's why we have this idea of building a samadhi for them, and then it becomes a shrine. But for most others, it is believed that it is better to facilitate this body to return to the elements as fast as possible rather than allowing them to decompose. So that is one of the reasons why the body is cremated, right? So in such a scenario, one is probably given to think that organ donation may be a means of extending this body attachment, isn't it? If we believe that the subtle body can get attached to the physical remains, if we think that I'm going to take the organs of this person, from this deceased person, and fit it into another person, and will it lead to body attachment of the physical body? That's one question that probably comes up, isn't it? The other point which I thought of, I'll come back to that. I'm not leaving that end open. I'll come back to that point again. Once when Swami was talking during a conference in the hospital, the earlier years of the hospital, they used to have many of these cardiac conferences and other medical conferences, and Swami would very regularly be a part of those inaugural sessions, and Swami would give an inaugural discourse or a concluding discourse. In one of the discourses when Swami was speaking there, you know, Swami had said this. He said, I think that was a time when maybe cornea transplant was being done, I'm not sure, but Swami made this point during that discourse. He said, to an extent, the kind of life the person who donated the tissue has led also matters when we are doing transplant surgeries, right? This is what Swami said about cornea transplant. He said, you take it from another person and you operate this person and you do the transplantation. But the kind of life the person who is donating that cornea also matters. Now, if you look at it, I think this is why I said it's important to look at the philosophical point of view. Because Swami is suggesting that apart from just the tissues and the cells which are being taken from that person, there is something else also which is being transferred, which is subtle. We cannot overlook that fact. There is something subtle which is being transferred, and I think we need to keep that in mind also. Because this is Swami is talking about receiving an organ transplant. So I think that is the same case with being a donor also. So I'll again put that point and I'll leave it there. Which means something more subtle is also being transferred when you do a transplant surgery like this, when you take an organ from a person and give it to another person. So let's keep these two points with us. And for the next few minutes, what I'm going to try to do is, I'd like to talk about the idea of seva itself, because the whole concept of organ donation is probably a subset in the concept of seva. So for the next few minutes, we'll forget about organ donation. We'll talk about the concept of seva itself. And as I said, this will give us a general idea, and then we will take this and look at the concept of organ donation again. You know, when we talk about karma between individuals, when we say within a family, or why somebody is born to a certain parents, or why somebody is born as a sibling to certain people, you know, or sometimes it happens that we end up taking care of some strangers, or when we are in need, a stranger comes and helps us, probably for an extended period of a few years, and suddenly we lose contact with that person, and, you know, probably we never meet that person again. Or sometimes we end up serving people in their last time. You know, we don't know, they're not a part of our family, they're not any way related to us, but we end up taking care of some people for a few years. See, all of this happens because Swami says when there is a certain kind of give and take, right, between two individuals, that's when this happens. when there is a give and take where I have received something from somebody and I need to give back to that person, then a situation arises when, you know, it happens like this. Or even when we end up in a certain family as a child to a certain mother and father, Swami says there's always that give and take which is what is leading one to be born there, right? So how does this give and take come about? I think from the feeling of I am giving another person, right? That is the basis of this give and take. When I'm helping somebody else, I'm giving something, or I'm monetarily helping somebody, the give and take comes basically from this fundamental belief that I am giving another person. So when we feel that I give, then you will have to receive at some point or the other, right? And that's one of the reasons why even spiritually, even generally, we say that you have to consciously reduce this feeling of ego and doership. And the more we do that, more we reduce our ego and the idea of doership, we are releasing ourselves from the bondage of people around us, and eventually we're freeing ourselves from the cycle of birth and death, right? This is about general give and takes between people. You know, sometimes you within a family, within neighbors maybe, or in your workplace. But now what happens when we talk about seva? When we go out and serve some people, or when we go out and help a stranger, the act as such is an act of goodness, right? Whatever seva we do is an act of goodness. So it does count as good karma, there's no doubt about that. But it can also be the starting of a give and take cycle. Albeit a good one, there's no doubt about that, because it is basically good karma. It's out of goodness that you want to go and serve a person. But this idea that I am serving so-and-so, or I am giving to so-and-so, automatically brings this idea of somebody is a giver and somebody is a receiver, and you are starting off a give and take cycle, isn't it? That's why to an extent it also becomes very, very important to ensure that the seva we do is done to the right person, because we all do it with the feeling that I am doing and I am giving money, or you know, this is my hard-earned money which I am giving for this particular charity. So that's why it becomes very important that if we donate money, and that money should go for the right cause, because we believe, we strongly do it with the idea that it is my money and I am giving it, right? So let's say someone is running a charity to probably cover up some wrong acts, or they do it merely to attain popularity. You know, a lot of people do that, right? And you look at the work which is being done and you say, no, it's after all good work, so I don't mind giving my money to that charity or giving my money to that organization. Swami says, to an extent, because you're doing it with the idea that this is my money, I will give it to anybody, and I feel these people are suitable, I feel they are doing good work, so I'm going to give it to them. When we do that, you also become party to the fundamental mistake which they're doing. If they're not doing it with the right attitude, Swami says, you are being party to that, you're, to an extent, you're contributing to that, right? So that's why it's very important, even when we're doing seva, to look at where our efforts are going, where our money and time is going. That's important. But, of course, that is not how Swami wants us to do seva, isn't it? Swami always says that you know, seva has to be done in a manner that it frees us, not in a manner that it binds us. So if in doing seva also we are leading to more give and take, and we're doing it like any other karma, doing it like what we are doing within our family, then there's no point in that, right? So that's why Swami, whenever he talks about seva, he wants seva to be done in a specific manner. And that's one of the reasons why Swami would often say this. In the initial years of the organization, Swami would tell this to the organizers, to the office bearers in the organization. He would say, as much as possible, don't try to tag on with other groups, other NGOs, and do seva. Because Swami says, see, the approach that I want the organization to have is very different. What I'm trying to teach you all to have as an approach to seva is different. So when you mingle with others, they might not come in with the same approach. Unless and until you're able to convince them, or you're able to make them see the value of what the way you would like to do seva, Swami would say that it doesn't matter. You don't have to do big seva, even if you're doing it small. Do it the way Swami wants you to do. I think that is why it's very important, because it's not about serving. It's not about we going there and serving a good number of people alone. It is also about what it does to us spiritually. What does it do to our spiritual progress too, right? So how does Swami want us to do seva? Swami has spoken extensively about it. I'm just going to talk about 3 points, which probably will cover most of the attitude with which Swami wants us to do seva. And I will tell you how it is important from the discussion which we just had. One, Swami says, do seva as an expression of empathy rather than an expression of sympathy. See, when we do seva, or when we go and try to help somebody out of sympathy, you're feeling sorry for that person's plight, right? You say that, okay, you are in need. I'm feeling sorry for what you're going through. I have the ability to probably alleviate your pain. So I am serving you, or I am helping you out of your situation. That's what happens when you do it out of sympathy. But when we do it out of empathy, it is this idea that your pain hurts me and I am doing seva as a means of self-appeasement. I'm not doing seva. I mean, this is again something which Swami would tell so much. You know, go and help a person not because that person needs you, because you are in pain seeing that person suffer, and you are doing seva as a means of removing your own pain. That is the difference between doing seva as an expression of empathy versus doing seva as an expression of sympathy. So Swami says the first point is do seva as an expression of empathy. Always keep this in mind that you're not serving another person, you're serving your own self, you're removing your own discomfort, you're removing your own pain in seeing somebody else in pain. So that's one point which Swami says. The second thing which Swami would often talk about is, even as you're doing seva, you must try and give up body attachment, right? So that is why if you look at the 9-point code of conduct which Swami has given for the organization, though it is Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, you will see that there is so much importance which is given to bhajans, meditation, study circles. The reason is, even as you are serving others, you have to slowly give up the idea of body attachment. So all the sadhana that we do is to overcome body consciousness, right? So even as we do seva, we must be constantly working on giving up our body consciousness. Why body consciousness? Giving up the body consciousness is important because the idea of doership comes from body consciousness, right? The more I think that this is my body and the wealth that I have has been earned by my effort and my energy. So the whole idea of doership, now I am taking my money and doing seva, that idea of doership is based on body consciousness, right? So that is why Swami says, one, do seva as an expression of empathy. Two, do, and even as you're involving in seva, work on removing the body consciousness, right? The third point which Swami would often say, and it's not a third independent point, but I think it's a third point which kind of amalgamizes the first 2 points that we mentioned. Swami says, do seva as a form of worship. And doing seva as a form of worship, as I said, actually handles both of these issues which I just spoke about doing seva as empathy and doing seva without the idea of doership. Both of this is handled the moment you start doing service as an expression of worship or as a means of worship. The reason I'm saying this is, you know, when we do seva, it's easy if there's a hungry person and I'm directly going and feeding that person. Or if there's somebody in pain in a hospital and I'm directly going and serving that person, it's easy to have an idea of empathy. But if you look at many of the activities which our organization does, there are a lot of people involved in so many kinds of activities. Somebody who might just be offering the service of driving a truck, or somebody might be sitting somewhere in the kitchen and cooking for the patients who are coming for a medical camp. It's very difficult to bring an idea of empathy in such places, right? There's no question of you empathizing with somebody you're serving in such cases. So in such cases, when you start doing seva as an expression of worship, as a form of worship, then you're doing it as an offering to Swami, right? It then does not become a give and take between an individual. You're not giving it to a person. You might be sitting and cutting vegetables, as I said, or you might be doing something which is totally cut off. I mean, there are a lot of people who do a lot of service through online. You know, we have a lot of our volunteers who help us in Radio Sahaya, for that matter, in Vidyavahini. all of these people are not in a position where they're able to interact with the beneficiary, right? So even in such cases, when you bring in this idea that I'm doing service as a form of worship, your give and take becomes between you and Swami, right? You're doing it as an offering to Swami. So it becomes a give and take with Swami, and as long as it's a give and take with Swami, I think it's absolutely fine. There's no question of being bound or it leading to more complex karma. So that is why one of the reasons why when you do it as an offering to Swami, it takes care of that first point which I spoke about. And when we start doing seva as worship, automatically the feeling of I am merely an instrument comes, right? That's what Swami would say, nimitta matram, is an attitude which comes the moment you start doing it as a form of worship. And if it doesn't come consciously, if it doesn't come automatically, then I think consciously we should try to feel that we are only an instrument and, you know, we are doing it on behalf of Swami. So these two, I mean, these three things which I mentioned. First is try to as much as possible do it as an expression of empathy. Secondly, as I said, work on removing the body consciousness as we are doing seva. And thirdly, when we are doing service to others as a expression of our worship to Swami, automatically all three of this is handled, right? So even when it comes to regular seva, this, forget about organ donation, forget about all that what we've spoken, even when it comes to regular seva, this is very, very important. The idea of giving doership. If we are not doing that, then we are only, instead of just serving the people in our family and probably having give and take with five members in the family, we are going out into the society and saying that I'm serving 500 people and I'm taking care of 1,000 people. I think we are creating give and takes with so many more people. That's even worse than not doing seva, right? So the most important thing is, even as we are doing seva, this idea of doership has to be given up. In fact, there is this very, very beautiful incident in the Mahabharata. Whenever I think of the idea of doing seva as an expression of empathy and attaching that with giving up doership, this is the episode which comes to my mind, where there is this very, very beautiful incident where the great hero Karna is in his last moments of his life. When he's been shot down, Arjuna has shot him down under the instructions of Krishna. But after this, what happens is Krishna himself goes to Karna in the disguise of a Brahmin. And this character of Karna is a very, very complex character in the Mahabharata. He's supposed to be one of the most noble people, but he belongs to the unrighteous camp or the adharmic camp of the Kaurava, the princes. But nevertheless, he is also known for his charity. He's known as a person who never, turns away anybody who comes to his doorstep asking for any favor or any charity. So that is the kind of reputation that he has. So here he is lying on the battlefield, spending his last moments, and his life is ebbing out of his body. At that time, Lord Krishna comes to him in the disguise of a Brahmin and tells Karna that, "Oh, are you Karna? I came all the way, I've been traveling for so many days now. Somebody told me that if I go to Karna and ask him for charity, he will give, and I don't have to worry about anything after that. So I traveled so far and I came here. Alas, finally one person at least is going to return from the presence of Karna unsatisfied." So Karna is, you know, very troubled by this idea that he's not able to do charity. More than the fact that he is dying, he is troubled by this idea that somebody has come to him asking for something and he's not able to give anything in charity to that person. So in frustration, Karna says that, you know, I gave so much away in all my life. I've done so much charity. I've helped so many people. But today I am in a state where I don't have anything. There's nothing I have. I'm just going to die. What does a dying man have? And then Karna says that all I am left with is the merits of all the good actions that I've done. All the sadhana, all the charity and the seva that I've done, I'm only having the merits of those. That's what Swami would say, right? When you die, that is the only thing that you carry with you. The merits of all your good actions is the only thing you're permitted to carry across this barrier of death. So that's what Karna says. And immediately this Brahmin, who is actually Krishna, tells Karna, "Oh, you still have the merits of all the good actions that you have done? All right, you give me in charity the merits of all your actions." Right? This is what this Brahmin says. And the moment Karna listens to this proposal of the Brahmin who says, give me the merits of all your actions, Karna realizes that probably this is going to be the most noblest of all the charities that he has ever done. Because he realizes that all through this, somewhere that idea that I am helping somebody comes. And that's where the doership comes. And even this idea that I am gathering merit comes from that body consciousness which leads to doership. So when Krishna comes and says that, you know, give me the merits of all the actions that you have done, he recognizes that this is not a Brahmin and this is not an ordinary charity that he's being asked of. So instantly he says, you can take it. I'm giving you all the merits of my actions. And that's how after that he actually gets a vision of the cosmic form of Lord Krishna. Right? So even as we are doing seva, this is a very, very important thing. It's if we have been doing seva for so many years and we have not come to this point of feeling that I am not the doer, I am just an instrument and I am doing it as an offering to Swami, then I think we really need to look at what we are doing. Now going back to our discussion, now if this is the problem with doership that is born of body consciousness, and when we talk of doing seva, spending our time or giving our money in charity, we are talking about our attachment and doership which is coming to the property that we have gathered with this body. When we're talking about organ donation, we're talking about the body itself. When we talk of the body itself and doing charity of the organs in the body, how much more the problem of body attachment will cause. Right? As I said, some of these things are very, very subtle. We cannot wish them away. As Swami said, even an organ carries something subtle about the person who is donating the organ, and the person is going to receive that also. We cannot discount some of these subtle transfers also which happen, right? So when we talk of seva itself, the need for giving up body attachment in seva itself, what about when we talk about, what about when we come to the case of organ donation where we are talking about the body itself, right? Doership has its basis in body consciousness. And then the body consciousness is maximum when it comes to our own body, right? I think almost a year ago I had a question which I had answered about the statement which Swami makes that you're not one but three. The one you think you are is the body, the one others think you are is the mind, and the one you really are is the Atma. Where the question was, you know, how is it that who I think I am is the body? It should be the other way around. Like who I think I am should be the mind, and what others think I am is the body. So I think in that course of that answer, I had mentioned this. Because our entire experience, the entire belief systems and the way we act, the way we make decisions, all of this is based on the idea of body consciousness. That's why Swami says this. Because this whole idea of I am so-and-so going through life, this is my family and these are my colleagues and these are the things I've done, these are my property, all of that is based fundamentally on this idea of body consciousness. Because that is so very strong in all of us. So that is maximum when you're talking about body. We associate ourselves so much with the body. So you cannot say that I have completely gotten over it. And that is why they say even the subtle body, even after death, the subtle body does feel that kind of attachment towards the body. Unless and until we have worked on it spiritually, we have really worked hard to get over it. Right? And talking about that, I recall one of my friends was once telling me that he has this very rare blood group, right? Talking about the blood donation in a hospital. I think most of us can, whenever we go to the hospital, we go to the blood bank and we donate our blood. But if you have a rare blood group, let's say a B negative or an O negative, the blood bank will never take your blood. They will say that because they don't get as many patients who have that requirement coming to them quite often, right? So what they would do is they'll take your number and they'll keep you on the roll, and if and when a patient comes with that rare blood group, they'll call you and then you can go and donate your blood. So this friend of mine had a B negative or something like that. So once we had gone for blood donation, and the moment they found that he was a B negative, they did not take his blood, they took his number instead. So one day they called him up and they said that there is this young girl from North India who needs a heart surgery and we need blood for that. So he instantly went and he gave the blood. And he was saying that after that, after a couple of days, he asked somebody in the hospital, one of her brothers, that what happened to that patient. And they said the surgery was a success and she's doing well after the surgery. So this boy was saying that he had this very, very strong urge to go and see that patient. Because he was saying that I have given her blood and this child has survived because of that. I really want to go and see her. And he was saying that when that thought came and he suddenly literally hit himself and he said, what am I thinking? This is probably why we should never do this. This is, that feeling that I have given blood. This is my own blood that I've given and somebody's life has been saved. I think that's precisely the reason why they have a blood bank and you don't know who's going to use your blood. You just do it as an offering to Swami and it gets used to wherever it needs to be used. And probably that's one of the reasons why even if you look at the way service is done as part of the Central Trust, you'd never have this idea of you go and sponsor a patient's treatment or you go and sponsor a student's education. It's never there. Swami, I think, never encouraged that. You always donate to the Central Trust and Central Trust decides, which activity needs to be supported so that you don't have that feeling that, this project I funded or this person I've given education. I mean, that's precisely the reason. The whole idea of Swami's organization is not merely to serve people. It is to, make us progress spiritually, which is a very, very important part of the seva which Swami does. That's why Swami never encourages this. Though there are few cases where Swami has chosen to name buildings after the people who have donated for that. You have the Sai Kulwant Hall, you have the Sai Ramesh Hall, you have the Purnachandra Auditorium, but I think it's very, very few. The reason why Swami has set up a system like this is not because of anything else, but because it is best for our spiritual progress to do seva that way. That, we do it as an offering to Swami and we leave it to Swami to decide where that money needs to be used. So going back to that idea of, that is what happens when blood donation itself makes you feel like that. When we are using the organs in our body to serve another person, we must keep this in mind that this is something which is going to be very, very strong, right? What we do with that, we'll come to that in conclusion. And one of the solutions is, I think, can be drawn from this incident. As I said in the initial part of the answer, Swami would often come to the hospital and sometimes even visit the blood bank. This happened during one of those visits when Swami suddenly walked into the hospital and one of our lecturers was in the blood bank giving blood on that particular day. And those days, whenever Swami would drive into the hospital, an announcement would be made over the PA system saying that Swami has just entered the hospital. So all of you, please remain in your places and Swami is coming around. So he heard this announcement being made. He had just completed giving his blood. So he decided to stay for a few more minutes so that, if at all Swami comes that side, he would have darshan. And he was very, very lucky that Swami chose to come into the blood bank that day. So Swami came in and Swami looked at him and Swami's face lit up and Swami said, hey, you're here. So Swami asked him, so did you give blood? And, he looked at Swami. He was very happy. He said, yes, Swami, I just gave blood. Then Swami asked him, but you did not give me. And then Swami walked away before he could even recoup and try to give an answer to that. So he was going on thinking about that. What does Swami mean by saying that you gave blood, but you did not give me? So he was saying that he was thinking of it for 2-3 days and suddenly it struck him that, he has done blood donation so many times. You go to the hospital and you feel a sense of fulfillment, right? That I have given my blood and some patient is going to benefit out of it. It suddenly struck him that, it needs to be given not with that kind of a feeling, but the feeling that, Swami, I'm giving blood to you. You use it for whichever patient you feel suitable. So I think that attitude is what is so very important. It's so important even when we are doing regular seva with, after all, the money that we have gathered. It's so very important when we talk about our own organs. So if you have chosen to be an organ donor, I think it's definitely good. As I went through the whole thing, it's a very noble idea. But ensure that you do it with this attitude, right? In the modern context, it's always spoken of as the idea of organ donation looks like a very, very noble idea and it's very romantic. But if you really look at it, I think it's far more superior to be able to serve when there is vitality and life in this body than to think of serving somebody else after the death, right? Given all of this, what I said, you know, Swami wants us to lead a life of service even when we are alive. Yes, as I said, probably this will be the simplest of charities that you can do. You know, you're dead, you don't need the body parts anymore, and you're giving it to somebody in seva. I'm not saying it is bad, but it is probably not as noble as we sometimes imagine it to be. Swami wants us to use our body, use our energy, and use all of these organs for the service of others, even when there is vitality and life in this body. I think that is far more important than the idea of using it after death. I think that's probably the last thought I can think of. But still, if you choose to do that, I think this attitude that Swami, this organ, this body, you have given it to me, I'm giving it back to you, if it can be used for somebody else whom you choose is befitting, then so be it. I'm offering it to you. As I said, you know, it's like you're not giving blood to anybody else, you're giving blood to Swami, and Swami chooses whom it goes to. I think that attitude is very, very important. So if you sign up to be a blood donor or organ donor, ensure that you have that sort of an attitude with which you go through it. And, you know, finally, probably I'll just end with that. During the 2002 Gujarat earthquake, I recall when it's a huge earthquake in Bhuj, and a lot of relief was going on from South India and all parts of the country to the people over there. And I recall even in the hostel, there was a huge drive to send a lot of relief material to those people. And, you know, we always have this attitude of if some disaster is there and you need to send relief, all the old things which we won't use, or semi-old things and clothes which we don't need, we bundle them up and send it to them. And I think that's what we all did in the hostel too. And when Swami came to know of it, Swami was quite upset actually. Swami was pretty upset about the idea. Swami would say, why would you send your discards to somebody in the name of seva? Swami said, that is not how I want you all to do seva. In fact, after that, Swami sent, I don't know how many number of trucks of food, grains, and things necessary for people who are struck in a disaster like that, and new clothes and saris and dhotis and all of that, and blankets, all brand new ones. Swami said, almost like setting an example for all of us, you know, this is how I want you to do seva. I don't want you to give them the discards of what you have. So I think that is the attitude we all have to keep in mind. We are not here to do seva of things that we don't need. If I've led a life where I've completely led a life of serving myself, the body attachment has been so much. This is my body. I'm beautifying my body. I'm feeding my body. I'm taking care of my body. At the end of it, I've used it to the last bit of energy which is there in every organ in the body. And then I say, oh, all right, it's a very noble idea. I'm going to do organ donation. And it is like this. I don't have any more need for this, so I'm giving it away. Yes, it is charity. Yes, it's a very noble thing. But after all, it's not as noble as probably it appears. What is even more better, and what Swami wants us to do, is even as there is energy in this body, can we use it for the service of others? And as we are doing that seva, can we believe that we are not the doer? Do it with the idea of non-doership. Even as we are doing it, give up the body consciousness. If we can do that, I think that is what Swami expects of us. So it's not a bad thing, as I explained through the entire course of the answer. But I hope I have at least given, if not a comprehensive perspective, at least a different perspective to look at this issue. So I thank the listener for asking this question. It's a very, very important topic to talk about. So I'm very glad this came up. If you wish to contest any of the things I've said, I would be glad to receive mails from you. If you think otherwise, you can write to me. Or if you have further clarifications on what I've said, I'd be glad to reply to that too. With that, dear listeners, I'll wind up this week's program. Thank you for joining me. We'll continue again next week with another question on Radio Sai Answering Booth. If you have a question like this on practical spirituality, do write to me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. If you wish to be anonymous, do let me know. If you can record your question in your own voice and send it across, it will be wonderful to play it. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. Do join me again next week for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. I'm going to leave you with a song so that it gives time for Sai Prakash and Bishu to join you for the last episode, last segment of the day, Radio Sai Answering, Radio Sai Vahini Satsang. I'm sorry. Thank you. Happy listening.
राम है स्वनाम धन राम धन्य राम राम को प्रणाम राम नाम को राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन ओ मन रे कर तू राम भजन राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन राम में है सब तुलसी के प्रभु नानक के रब तुलसी के प्रभु नानक के रब राम रमैया घट घट वासी राम रमैया घट घट वासी सत्य कबीर वचन राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन ओ मन रे कर तू ओ मन रे कर तू राम भजन राम भजन कर मन राम भजन कर मन
श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामा 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 श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामा
भजन कर मन।